This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by TurbulenceTraining.com, BlackStarLabs.com, and by RobertsonTrainingSystems.com. On this week's episode of the FitCast, we answer a ton of your mailbag questions. Also, we finish off the roundtable discussion on getting into the fitness industry with some of Tony and also some of Keith's history. So, without further ado, let's jump into the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of the FitCast, episode number 68. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and alongside me this week in our virtual roundtable, I guess you could say, first off, Keith Scott is back from KeithScottTraining.com. What's up, Keith?
Not much, Kevin. How are you doing?
Doing pretty good. Pretty good. Also, we have Jimmy Smith of JimmySmithTraining.com, and also you can figure that out just at a .blogspot.com as well, and I'm sure Jimmy has links all over the place for that. So, Jimmy, what's up, man?
Nothing, Kev, nothing. It feels good to have the old new cast back, you know, so it's good to have everybody back together again.
Yes, we are actually just an all-male edition, I guess, this week of the FitCast again, because our last host is Tony Gentlecore of GentlecoreTraining.com, and also you can also check out his Step Up blog at Boston. Is that right? Step Up blog at BostonHerald.com. I'll throw a link up for it in the show notes as always. But people might have to. Unless Tony, do you know the link for it off the top of your head?
I don't know the link off the top of my head.
They gotta give you a better link. They can't just have some crazy link. It's so hard for.
Long, I know. I tried to give a direct link to my Blogspot one, so you can just direct link to that, but as far as the exact address, I have no idea what that is.
Okay.
Bastards.
We'll figure it out, and we'll throw it in the show notes so everyone can check that out, because now, Tony, that's where you're posting the majority, or if not all, of your blog posts.
Yeah, I made that my specific blog. I know there is an RSS feed on it, because I know I have a couple clients at the facility now that link to it, so it updates through Google, so whenever I make an update, it tells them that I updated it, so once people do it once, it will just tell you that it's updated daily.
All right, well, maybe if I can remember, I'll also throw up the link for the RSS feed, because I know everyone's using that these days to get their news and also the podcast, so it's good stuff. Let's jump into the...
It's good to be back, by the way. What's up, guys?
Yeah, I mean, we took last week off, mostly because I had a lot of homework to do. It was not Halo 3 related. I want to state that clearly, because Jimmy thought it was, and it was not.
No, dude, I didn't say that. Day, right? That was totally Keith on the email, bro. I didn't even say that.
All right,
I didn't say that.
Maybe yes, you did.
Oh, it was Tony then.
Oh, yeah, I believe it was me.
Okay.
I don't even know what Halo 3 is.
Oh, Christ, you're not that old.
I really don't. I mean, I hear about it.
All right, well, actually, while we have it brought up, I just want to give a shout-out to Seth Gibson up at Bungie, who are they're the makers of Halo 3, and he actually is a listener of the show, and he's one of the technical designers of Halo 3, so huge shout out to Seth. It was really kind of cool to find out that we have a listener up at Bungie, as I know I'm a huge fan. Jimmy Smith doesn't play Xbox, so he's a
Xbox guy. I'm not an Xbox guy. I'm a PlayStation 3 guy. But Seth, I'm like 6'6", bald, and 230. You can definitely make me into some type of character in the next Halo. So shoot me out an email. We'll figure it out, all right?
Okay. I don't know if they want the soldiers to be that tall. They're kind of easy pickings for the snipers. But I guess you guys can stay in contact.
Oh, I could be like an ugly character or something on there, you know?
All right. That's you said it, not I. We'll keep moving on. Tony, do you just want to talk a little bit about what's going on at Crescent Performance? Because, I mean, the last couple of months, things have been nuts there.
Oh, my God, so hectic. We've definitely signed on a lot of athletes, high school athletes, got a few college guys coming, a few pro athletes coming in. Eric decided that he's going to open up a satellite facility in Framingham. Not quite as big as the one we have in Hudson, but he's going to be working with Doug Carroll, who's a pitching coach, a local pitching coach, and it's a little bit closer to Boston. And he decided he's going to, in like a week or two, he was just waiting for the equipment to come in, but we're going to have a satellite facility up there where Eric will be there 2 or 3 times a week. I'll still be at the one in Hudson. And, yeah, we're pretty ecstatic. Things are progressing very nicely. We couldn't be happier.
Very cool. And I know I'm kind of itching to get down there and check the place out still.
And yeah, it's funny. We've had a lot of people stop by. Two guys from T-Nation have stopped by. We actually have an intern right now from Arizona that is helping us out for 2 months. And I know we have a list of people who have contacted us to see if they can intern through the winter and maybe next summer. So things are definitely progressing quickly, but in a good way.
Absolutely. Well, it's nice to hear that you're busy out there and things seem to be going great. We just lost Jimmy Smith for a sec, but we'll hopefully get him back. But want to quickly mention that Chad Waterbury actually sent me an email a couple weeks ago. He's got a new program out that he's selling through his website. I think it's called the 10-10 Transformation. Lose 10 pounds of body fat and gain 10 pounds of muscle. And he shot me out a copy to review. And it looks pretty good. I'm actually started doing a couple of the phases because I've been going for the last almost 4 months pretty hard. And I started getting those feelings that I was just doing too much. My back started hurting. I just was feeling like shit for a couple of weeks. And after making gains for like the last 3-4 months, I just started seeing a little bit of a plateau. And I wanted to change it up because basketball for intramurals is actually starting pretty soon. And I take that pretty seriously. And I just wanted to get back into playing a little bit more basketball, not worrying about weights as much, but play an extra 2 or 3 days of full court basketball a week just to get whatever's left of my game back, if there ever was any. So, Jimmy, are you back with us?
Yes, I am.
All right. Well, I just want to let everyone know that Chad has that out. You can check it out at his website, chadwaterbury.com. It's $20, and it comes with I think it's 4 months of programs. See, it's 4 3-week phases. So
yeah, it's I've actually been talking to Chad pretty frequently, and the book, you know, sounds really good. I haven't had a chance to get a look at it yet, but knowing Chad and knowing his work, you know, it's going to be a very good book. So check it out. And like Kevin said, it's only like $20, right?
Yeah, and it's a PDF. You can download it immediately. It's straight and to the point. He really, really simplifies the diet breakdown and what you're going to be eating. He really just splits it up into really simple categories. You really can't go wrong as long as you're eating what's in the manual. And the funny thing is he doesn't even give really what you should be eating calorie-wise. He just tells you to stick with these foods, eat like you think you should be eating, and just see what happens, and you should get the results. And I don't know. It's worth a look, especially if you want to change something up. I know a lot of our listeners out there love it when Chad comes on the show, and they love his programs that are up on T-Nation, so, and also his book, Muscle Revolution.
I mean, I haven't gotten the book, but I know hearing you guys talk about it, I do like the idea of instinctive eating. I think if more people, you know, quit worrying about minutia, like do I need to be eating, you know, 1.25 grams of protein a day or 1.17. I think once people learn how to eat the right way, what foods they should be eating, which we all know it's not rocket science,
mm-hmm.
Everything else takes care of itself. So I do like the idea of following that instinctive eating program. And most of our listeners, you know, read Variety, they read my stuff, they read Lyle McDonald's stuff or whatever. And I think, you know, once you get rid of the minutia and we know how to eat, everything else will take care of itself. So I think that's a good approach.
Again, if you want to check that out, just head over to chadwaterbury.com, and it's $20. But if you have $20 to spend and you want to get some reading in, it's a pretty decent manual. I'll have a few review of it up in a couple weeks after I battle through a couple of the programs. But it's nice to, like, it's really nice to be doing something completely different for once, doing some short rest periods, and I really actually feel like I'm doing something different for once in the last couple months. So I'm liking it so far, and again, I'll keep everyone posted with that. All right. That's going to pretty much do it for our news. This week in the show, we're doing a ton of mailbag stuff, so I think we should just not waste any more time and let's jump into the mailbag. Welcome to the mailbag section for this week. We'll jump right into it. The first one says, "Hey Kevin, could be it's a question for the FitCast crew, maybe for Jen, but Jen's not here, so we'll do our best covering it. I trained a friend of mine for the last couple of months, and she made great progress. I put her through 3 sessions of total body compound exercises: deadlift, squats, bench press, and etc. And she got pregnant now, and she asked me what to do. Honestly, I don't know. I looked online. It looks like she can continue to work out with a few exceptions. Can you help or ask for help from some of the FitCast crew? Thanks in advance." And I'm going to say that's from Avichai. And I know...
It's not the first question. I remember you say that name a lot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, our listeners love the show, and they like to email in, so it's nice to get multiple emails.
I'm just saying. I'm just thanking her for asking another question.
Yeah. Well, what do you guys think? I know, Tony, do you want to jump in? Because I don't know if you said you had some prior experience with clients like this.
Yeah, I've dealt with a few pregnancies on the training aspect of things, thank God. But I personally, I don't find too many limitations. I think a lot of the research, or not so much research, but the information you get on the internet tends to be a little too conservative. I know this particular person said they were doing compound movements, squats, deadlifts, bench press. I honestly would still do that, but maybe modify it to maybe rack pulls, front squats, stuff like that to a certain extent. I know after the first trimester, they say you're not supposed to do anything lying on your back, so I might put people at an incline. The only thing that you have to be cognizant of is the hormone relaxin that increases quite a bit in pregnant women, so you have to be careful of proprioception and stuff like that. So you just kind of monitor it as you go, but I've trained those kind of clients myself. I've seen pregnant women who look like they're going to burst any minute, and they're doing single leg movements and deadlift variations and stuff like that. So, you do kind of have to cater it to the individual to an extent of what they're capable of, but certainly I'm not going to be the guy that's just going to put them on a machine circuit for that hour. So I still think you can still do those compound movements, but you just might have to tweak them slightly to kind of go along with the pregnancy as the 9 months go along.
How about you, Mira, Keith? Do you guys have anything to add to that?
Well, yeah, I'll jump in. I've dealt with a few pregnancies in training, but the biggest thing I mean, you have to say first is you always want to be extremely careful and go with what their doctor says,
mm-hmm.
because no matter what you think might be right, this isn't just an orthopedic thing. This is a pregnancy. And if anything goes wrong, you don't want to be on the wrong end of it. So I've always had them go back to their doctor and make sure that their doctor okays whatever we're going to do, whether I agree with it or not. If the doctor says no, we don't do it. I have a lady right now that I'm dealing with that just found out she was pregnant, and she totally stopped exercising. I didn't even argue with her. That's what her doctor told her. So you have to be careful. But with all that said, if you do get the green light and everything's good, I agree with Tony. The biggest thing I worry about is hormone levels and joint proprioception, doing certain things they couldn't do before, even stretching, right down to stretching. I stretched a lady that was about 8 months pregnant that I was working with, and she really came in the next day with some major soreness just because she was able to go further than she normally would. And, we didn't really catch it, but her joints were definitely looser, and she had some issues the next day with a lot of joint soreness and things like that. So you just have to be very careful with the compound movements, that you don't go too far, and they're not going, for example, if they're in great condition, they're not going too deep into their squat just because they can. So you have to be aware of range of motion and those types of things. And if their doctor gives them the okay, then you can go business as usual up until a certain point.
Yeah, what for you guys, what is generally that certain point? How far, how many months in can you go and still continue to train? Because I know Jimmy was talking to me earlier. He was watching Entertainment Tonight, and he loves to see how all the actresses can train all the way up until like the last month before their pregnancy. So
damn, Pinocchio, all the damn line, your nose just grew.
It's already big enough, but
yeah, it's damn big.
All right. Anyways, for you guys, what tends to be the general prescription from doctors, or does it really vary vary a lot?
Well, it varied for me. I mean, I trained a girl up to, she had her baby 3 days after our last training session.
Wow.
And her doctor told her just to go until she, if she can. I had another lady that had to quit 5 months in just because she wasn't feeling comfortable. I mean, you have to remember, hormones are out of control. So some of these ladies might not, you know, whether they want to train or not, they just can't. So, I mean, a lot of it depends on the way they feel, but I've had doctors cut it at 7 or 8. I've had doctors go up to the very end.
Well, so,
and you also got to remember, too, that, you know, when you're training someone who's pregnant, we're not trying to break any PRs or anything here. You know,
nope.
trying to get them into the gym, kind of prevent as much weight gain as possible, and just have them get moving and burn some calories. And I know Jen's brought this up in the past as far as the nutrition aspect. You know, pregnant women only need an extra 300 calories a day. So to put that into context, it's like 2 tablespoons of olive oil. So all these women out there who are, you know, I'm eating for two, I can eat all I want, you know, that's complete hogwash. So, I mean, that's getting a little bit off topic with the nutrition aspect. But certainly, yeah, the training, like, as Keith said, I mean, I've dealt with a variety of different, some people had to stop after 5 or 6 months. But yeah, when you're dealing with hormones, it can be a ride, that's for sure.
Yeah, I usually I don't really have much to say or to add because I don't really train that many pregnant women. Like I will really agree with Keith, like really go by what the doctors say, because generally, like if it's a like an orthopedic surgeon that sends a client to like me, Tony, or Keith and says tell the person to squat, we're like, well, the person has to go to the bathroom, right? So they have to squat type thing. Like we're confident in our knowledge there, but when it comes to pregnant women, like. I don't you just like go with what the doctor said. I will throw one little tidbit in about nutrition, though. A lot of research shows that by the third trimester, the mother has given all her selenium to the fetus. So we're going to know if there's a selenium deficiency. We're going to have issues with our thyroid. So I would tell women to get on like a selenium supplement, magnesium supplement. So that's just a little aside.
Keith, just jumping back to you quickly. That client that you had that went all the way up to 3 days prior to her pregnancy, to giving birth, what were you doing up until that time?
We were doing our normal program. I mean, all we really did is just lightened any kind of abdominal pressure that we would normally do. So, you know, we went from doing, you know, heavy duty squats to a little lighter squats with high repetitions, just so there wasn't that Valsalva maneuver thing going on. I mean, I was at that point I wasn't chancing anything. I mean, I didn't, you know, I'll take care of an injury pretty easily, but I don't want to give birth. So, you know, I was really easy with anything that was causing major pressure in the abdomen area where she would really have to fight for that last rep. So we were doing squats. We were doing, you know, one-legged deadlifts. We were doing, you know, the normal fare, but we just lightened everything up and went high repetition. The biggest thing that you have to remember, too, as a trainer is you have to remember why you're training your client. At that point, I was training, you know, the last 3 or 4 months, training her to be strong enough so she would have a good pregnancy and a good, you know, we could get back on to things as soon as she ended, which we did a few months after she had her baby, and she got back pretty quickly. So we just kind of shifted her focus more than anything.
All right, is there anything else anyone wants to add before we move on to the next question? All right, and also, when Jen does come back, we will have her chime in as well, because I know she had 2 pregnancies, so I know she has some pretty good experience with this herself. Next question comes from Chris. I just finished reading John Berardi's Scrawny to Brawny and liked the fact that he pointed out about hypertrophy and strength training both yielding gains in muscle mass. If more people at the gym realized that doing triples also stimulated growth, maybe not to the extent of hypertrophy sets, that more people would be getting stronger and bigger. Why is there still a stigma that heavy lifting in the 1-4 rep range can't make you grow? How many hugely strong powerlifters does it take to prove a point to the average gym rat? Any comments on this would be appreciated. And again, that's from Chris. So, I mean, this he makes a great point there. I mean, I found that I couldn't get bigger doing normal hypertrophy sets, like going into that between like 8 and 12 rep range, I found that when I started going was then training with Eric at Excel, and I started doing some lower rep stuff, I started getting bigger and stronger at the same time, and it was a twofold thing. But to either of you guys, Jimmy, do you want to jump in and just talk a little bit about it?
I'll let the other guys go first. I've been talking a lot for the past couple weeks, so I'll let them go first.
Oh, that's nice of you. Well, how about you, Tony?
I couldn't agree more. I know from a personal standpoint, I didn't start putting on a decent amount of size and mass until I started doing lower reps. We also have to realize that a lot of people read the 1-4 rep range, and you know they're used to doing 3 sets of 10, 3 sets of 10, 3 sets of 10,
mm-hmm.
and then they say, okay, now I have to do 1-4 to get stronger. So they do 3 sets of 2, 3 sets of 3, 3 sets of 4, which really isn't all that much volume. So a lot of times, you know, that's why, you know, Waterbury comes in and says, well, why not do 8 sets of 3 or anything like that? I mean, you're still going to be getting the same amount of volume, but with a heavier load. So absolutely, you're definitely going to stimulate a lot of muscle growth that way. And let's not forget, I mean, power lifters do get some volume in. They don't just go in and do 12 reps. I mean, they might do a lot of singles with the main lift, which, you know, we all know deadlifting is going to put on size, squatting is going to put on size. But they do their accessory work too, so that they, you know, they are getting their volume in. But I really couldn't agree more. I don't know why it hasn't. There is still a stigma with doing lower rep stuff, but at the same time, you know, people just have to realize that, you know, to put on an appreciable amount of mass, like you're going to have to work hard, and that often entails, you know, training with lower reps and heavier weight.
Keith, do you have anything to actually? Before we jump to Keith, I just want to let everyone know, like, you can pick up Scrawny to Brawny for $13 on Amazon.com, and it's a great book. Especially, I mean, JB and Mike Mejia made that book for quote unquote hard gainers, ectomorph. So it might be something that you want to check out, and it's worth having in your library for $13 anyway. Especially when you can get free shipping on that. But Keith, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, Tony said it, you know, and I think we all agree that. Lower rep ranges, higher weight is definitely going to build muscle. I don't think there is too much of a stigma if you read anything that's been written in the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everything I pick up, if you pick up Waterbury or Jason Ferrugia's stuff, they all talk about doing low rep, very high weight, you know, singles, triples to put on size. And I think you just have to vary it. A lot of what comes out there is the old bodybuilding mentality. And a lot of people forget that those guys are juiced beyond belief. So no matter what they do, is going to put size on. But they need to do different, you know, higher rep things just to stimulate what they have left. But I mean, the bottom line is it's not really a stigma if you're up on what's out there these days. And a lot of this, and I think Jimmy will probably be able to answer this better than anybody. A lot of this is dictated on sound nutrition. As well, so you have to eat right, and you have to supplement right. Vary your training. Tony and I touched on this weeks ago. Remember, just varying your training and making sure that you have a high rep day, a low rep day, a medium rep day, and those. So your body never really gets used to anything. That's when you're going to put the most mass on. If you're a bodybuilder, you're in a different ball game and a different type of training. But for the most part, even those guys do lower rep and higher weight type of training.
Jimmy, do you want to?
Yeah, I agree with everything Tony. Are we still? Can you guys still hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if it got dropped. I agree with everything Tony and Keith said, but I'm going to disagree slightly. I think when people say, like, oh, you know, we have to lift lower to get bigger, that's true. We also have to look at cross-sectional area, right? So we can get bigger and stronger by doing like a hypertrophy work. In the higher rep range, or by doing more lower rep stuff, right? We can increase the size, or we can increase the strength of our cross-sectional area. And I think the problem is when you look at bodybuilders, you know, there's guys that can bench, you know, 315 once, for example. And these guys are enormous and look huge. I also think the problem happens when guys get stuck with their training too long. You know, it's all about periodization, and it's about hitting the plateau and then finding a way through it. And I think people, because there's still a lot of the same old information out there that tells you you have to lift 8 to 15 reps to get big. Initially, yeah, that's going to cause more, you know, micro trauma to the muscle to a certain extent than some lower rep stuff when you, you know, compare volume. And I just think that you have to do both. Like, I think anybody who tells you there's one school of thought is an idiot. And, you know, yeah, granted, lifting lower is going to blow a lot of people up. Like, Keith mentioned a lot of the great books, like Jason Ferrugia's recent book that came out. And, you know, there's stuff like that, stuff like Scrawny to Brawny and all the Waterbury stuff. You do have to go lower reps. You do have to do that. But saying that someone is going to lift 1 to 4 reps and they, quote, unquote, get it and they'll grow, I don't really agree with, because I think – like Tony pointed out, a lot of powerlifters, you know, they'll lift for singles in their first rep, and then everything else is going to be in, you know, like the 6 to 12 rep range. They're going to try to add some hypertrophy there, because we have to remember that, you know, different rep ranges are going to cause different hormonal adaptations in the muscle, right? In order to cause different tensions, and that's what really matters. So I don't think it's as easy as saying, oh, people don't get it, you know, everybody has to lift heavy weights. Listen, I did the 8x3 full body workouts, the 7x4s. After like 2 weeks, I didn't even want to go in the gym. You know, like, and that's why I wrote about it in Naturally Diesel, where in my opinion, the best way to grow and to get stronger at the same time is to lift one upper, one lower, or two full bodies, and then do 3 body part splits. And I'm not saying do that all the time. You know, do that for 4 weeks, then go to, you know, two upper and two lower. But I just think that it takes the fun out of training if we're only going lower reps. And that's where something like undulating, like he said, higher rep and lower rep stuff really works. Because personally, if I go in and do like chins to bench to squat to deadlift, like, I'm going to be done. Like, I'm not going to want to, you know, go in the gym the next day or whatever. So I just think we need to have a more both kind of attitude. That makes sense.
Yeah, and don't get mixed up. I mean, I don't think – I'm not going to speak for Tony, but I certainly do rep. I mean, that's why I pointed it out. You have to have your low rep, high rep, medium rep days, and your undulating things, because that's what's going to stimulate your body the most. And the majority of people out there that are listening to this aren't so advanced. And if you are advanced, I apologize, but you're not so advanced that – you know, you guys need to be on a certain type of specialty program that no one's ever seen before. I mean, you know, if you go in and do the basics and you lift heavy one day and you lift light one day, high rep, and mix it up, you're going to grow. If your nutrition and rest is right, you're going to grow. And that's it can never be one thing. It needs to be a lot of different things. So I think the question that the guy asked is, yeah, include it in your program. But like Jimmy said, I mean, you still have to do the rest of the stuff too.
Yeah, I think like Keith just said, and I know Keith, Tony, myself, were all at a seminar recently where Mark Verstegen spoke, and Mark said a line that's there's something beautiful about something done simply, something done savagely well that's so simple, something along those lines. And, you know, keep both in your program. That's why you still see stuff. I picked up Flex magazine the other day, and they had like a breaking research that undulating periodization, you know, is good. Like, you still see stuff about that, and that's really where it comes in, though. Like, do both.
Very well put. And I wonder, Jimmy, you were talking about that you seem to not feel as good when you're doing just low reps. I wonder if that obviously had some kind of like psychological effect neurochemically based on like...
I'm sure it did. You also have to look at, this is going to be a lot more fatiguing. I know, and I don't want to get too old school bodybuilder here, but bodybuilders will say you have to feel the muscle working. And to a certain extent, I will agree with that, right? On a chin-up, if I'm feeling it more in my biceps than I am in my lats, my rhomboids, there's going to be an issue, right? I just think that going in every day and doing the full bodies or the upper lowers, after a while, it breaks you down. Mentally and emotionally, physically, however you want to put it. Like, me and Tony had this conversation one time about it, that it's just at times you go in and yes, it's better and you know, you'll put up more weight, but at times it's not the best thing.
And that's the beauty about, you know, doing deload weeks and stuff like that is, I mean, I can tell everyone firsthand that, you know, pounding away low reps all the time, every single training session is going to beat you up. So, you know, there's times where I will go into quote-unquote bodybuilder mode and, you know, just have fun. You know, I'm in the gym all day. I'm training athletes. I'm training moms. I'm training, you know, whomever. And a lot of times at the end of the day, you know, where we're at now, we don't train until 6, 7 o'clock at night. So, but I know I've already been in the gym for most of the day. Like, you know what? I just want to have fun with my training. And while certainly squatting, deadlifting, heavy is fun, I mean, there's no doubt about it. There's just certain weeks where... you know, taking that, you know, giving your joints a break and just going to the higher rep is going to be very advantageous. And, you know, time and time again, it's said that the body is going to respond, is going to adapt more closely to a set and rep range than it is an exercise. So the more that we adjust our sets and reps, the better off we're going to be. But I will say this again, and I alluded to this in my 90% article, the rule of 90%. I do think more people should get more heavy singles in, 90% lifting, if they're wanting to get stronger. If getting stronger will get you bigger. And I mean, you know, assuming nutrition and not taking into consideration relative strength, but, you know, just varying it is absolutely, I mean, we're going to sound like a broken record, but the best of both worlds, everyone will be much happier.
Well, and I think, you know, Tony, when he talked about his rule of 90%, article is you have to look at, you know, the people that you're talking to. Like he said, we're not dealing with the most advanced people out there. If someone's really advanced, like I know we have people competing on stage that are listening to the show, whatever, you know, if you guys who need more quote-unquote advanced, you know, hypertrophy stuff, if you want to write in, write in. But like he said, when we're talking about the basic average everyday Joe, Tony's right. They need to get more 90%. I mean, there's times I go in the gym, and I swear to God, people don't understand that. To look big and to look muscular, you need to weigh more. You know, like mm-hmm. you're not going to be 190 pounds at 6'1" and look good. Like it's not going to happen. And I see guys going, and guys are doing lats and shoulders, right? And at times that could be good, but if they went in and said, okay, I'm just going to do, you know, 8 sets of heavy chins with 90%, you know what? They would grow a lot quicker.
Well, not only that, I mean, they'll get bigger, but it's just, the potential for future muscle growth is there. So when they do revert back to, you know, a hypertrophy phase, whatever you want to call it, you know, lifting heavy is going to recruit more motor units, going to make you more efficient. You know, that's going to translate over to, you know, your hypertrophy. So you know, a lot of times when you're lifting your lower reps, you're the potential for future muscle growth is there.
Yeah, you have to look at your whole max strength improvements, right? You improve your max strength, then your ability to use 80 pounds on a curl as opposed to 70 for 12 reps goes up. You know, look at the gains you're going to have there, right?
Absolutely.
And I think something that also factors in, I mean, Tony, you're talking about muscle fiber recruitment, and I think that that's something that more and more people are starting to learn about. I mean, Waterbury has started to base a whole series of articles just on that fact, and that's something that Eric tried to drill into my head constantly, is that, I mean, I've talked about it in the past on the show, about just getting the speed up on my lifts, just to get maximal muscle fiber recruitment. And
I also think, I'm sorry, Kev, I thought you were done.
No, and I was pretty much finished, you can go.
I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to finish up what I'm saying on this, that don't overanalyze things. I think people that are listening to the show, are reading T Nation, reading, you know, any other good website or magazine out there, I think we just have a tendency to overdo it. Like, you just got three different perspectives, right? Like Tony, you know, lifts to be strong. I mean, he has like a 9-pack and he eats Captain Crunch 11 o'clock at night. But I mean, you know, that's a different story. But I mean, you know, Tony lifts to be strong. I lift to look like I lift weights, and Keith lifts for a little bit in the middle. You know, you got three different perspectives there. Look at the common things we mentioned. Heavyweights use different rep ranges. That's all you need to know. You know, you don't need to worry about all the excess stuff, because that's just going to hold you back. That minutia is going to hold you back.
That's a good point. Very good point.
You might find something that you might just find a rep range where you explode and you see growth. So, I mean, just play around with it and make sure you're tracking results and see what happens. All right, let's jump into the next question. It comes from someone named Kevin. Wasn't me, though. It says, "Hey, guys, I've been listening to the FitCast for the past few weeks, and I'm really enjoying the discussions and interview content. Here's my question. Do you often see clients who have injuries that were not properly treated by a physical therapist? And if so, what are some of the common things you see that are being missed by PTs with these people? Thanks for the input. Keep up the great work." So, Keith, the floor is yours.
All right. No, what I was going to say is, yeah, I've seen a lot of injuries come from PTs, and the biggest problem is the PTs that tend to treat the injury only, and they don't treat anything else around it. So the person gets very unbalanced, and a lot of the PTs that I've worked with in the past, so somebody comes in with a knee injury, for example, they're going to treat the knee. They don't look at the hip, they don't look at the ankle, they don't look at the upper body, they don't look at the core, they don't look at anything else. and the person gets, you know, their knee feels better and they leave and they come back even more messed up. And I think the biggest problem with a lot of, and I'm going to say old school physical therapists, because the newer PTs are a lot better, but the old school physical therapists, they only treat the injury. There's no person, there's no athlete, there's no worker out there, there's nobody. They don't see the person. They treat the injury only. The person never gets up off the table. They put stim, they do ultrasound, they do some stretching, and their insurance runs out and the people leave. So they're never really dealing with the problem. And we've talked in the past about hip imbalances, and we talked about shoulder. With, you know, Tony and Jimmy wrote, you know, a great article in T-Nation, you know, months ago about the whole scapula and the problems with the scapula defects and things like that. A lot of PTs don't look at that. They're going to look at a rotator cuff injury, and they're going to treat the rotator cuff only, and they're not going to look at the scapula around it. And the person comes back and they start training again, or they start their sport again or whatever, and the problem comes back. Or the person's even worse when they started before because it was a very unbalanced program. Newer PTs, you know, they tend to look at the big picture. And they, you know, I work with a couple PTs now that are awesome. These guys are strength and conditioning certified, and they understand the big picture. And they'll bring me in to consult on an injury because they know I'm going to look at things a little bit differently. So those are the biggest things I see with physical therapists, is that they only look at things through a very small lens, and they don't look at the whole body. And when you do an evaluation, to me, if somebody comes with a knee injury, I'm going to evaluate their hips first. You know, our knee's hurt, and I already know why it's hurt, so I'm going to take care of the hips, then I'm going to look in the ankles, and then I'm going to look at the upper body, and then I'll finally get to the knee and figure out what it is from there. And then you have to treat the whole person. So in a nutshell, I know that was kind of long-winded, but that's what most of the PTs I see, the mistakes they make with their patients, is they only treat the injury and they never go any further.
Well, does it seem like, is there a consensus that things are at least getting better in the PT community?
I think they are. I think a lot of PTs, and I might be biased because I work with some really good PTs, but, and I know Tony and Eric have worked with some good PTs before, but I think in general that, you know, word's getting out there that there's other people, and I'm not going to say the word treat because I don't want to get into trouble, but there's other people that can deal with these injuries sometimes better than the actual PT can. And PTs need to keep educating themselves just like everybody else. But with that said, that doesn't mean, you know, any trainer off the street should be dealing with injuries unless they have a lot of experience. And you can't get experience from a book. You have to work with people. So a lot of these PTs, I think, are getting better, and I think they're going to seminars. Even the seminar in Rhode Island, I met a handful of PTs that were there. And they were trying to learn about, you know, strength and conditioning and personal training through a different set of eyes. And some of the presenters that were up there are some of the best PTs around. So I think it's getting better.
Tony, I know you had something you wanted to add to this as well. Do you want to jump in and just see, like, really what has been your view on this situation now?
Well, first of all, that was just a spectacular answer by Keith, because I really couldn't agree more. I've been lucky in the sense that I've had the luxury of dealing with some really good PTs, Michael Holt, John Paloff. I know Keith isn't a PT, but I definitely think he's, you know. Wait, Keith, are you a PT?
No, I'm an ATC, but yeah, I deal with the. Yeah.
So I mean, I've been lucky in that regard. So I've kind of been spoiled in that sense. But Keith's right on the mark. I mean. You know, me working at Sports Club LA and other commercial gyms, it stands to reason I've dealt with a lot of clients who are coming out of rehab or even currently in it. And I catch on things that they miss or shouldn't, or maybe I wouldn't agree with. But at the same time, I realize I'm a personal trainer, strength coach, and I'm not a physical therapist. So I think there's a lot of PTs out there who, you know, they kind of, you know, getting a little bit over their head. You know, they'll buy the books by Saruman and all these other people who have books out there and read them and think they're a physical therapist. And I'm like, no. You know, you got to know your limitations. But, I mean, like he said, you know, I do a lot of shoulder injuries, and, you know, the clients will tell me, oh, I'm doing a lot of external rotation, you know, movements. And sure, that's what we, you know, we do external rotation to test gluteal north humeral function, but 99% of the time, the pathology is in the scapula, and as Keith alluded to. It could be down the ankle, you know, the serrate effect. You know, the body runs in spiral lines. So a lot of times, you know, we've seen at the facility, guys with shoulder issues, right shoulder hurt, their left ankle has, like, no mobility whatsoever. So, and then they fix up their ankle, their shoulder feels better. So, yeah, I couldn't really agree with Keith more, but I do think it is getting better because, you know, you have all these new school PTs that are coming out and kind of seeing, and like he said, you know, I've been to a couple seminars, and there's PTs at the strength and conditioning seminars, which is awesome. Because it gives them a little perspective on, what kind of mentality they need to use with their clients in the gym, outside the gym, while they're going through PT. So, other than that, I just have to say I agree with Keith wholeheartedly.
Well, it's good to see that at least you guys feel like things are getting better. Because that's scary if you have a PT that's just going to make things worse for you and not even fix the problem.
I mean, it stings because, there's times where I had clients who have had, years and years and years of lower back pain. I'm able to fix it, but they've been to, this PT, that PT, this chiropractor, that chiropractor, and time again, I ask, well, what did you do with them? And, oh, I did lower back stretching, and I did back extensions, and I'm just like, I want to bang my head against the wall, and, you're going to come across, stuff you're not going to agree with and that you would kind of question, but at the same time, I do know my limitations. I think most personal trainers should know their personal limitations, but I still think it's good to have the knowledge there, but yeah, there's more, I think it's improving, long story short.
Have either of you guys been in a situation where a PT has prescribed something for one of your clients and you totally disagreed with it? Have you ever had to like confront that PT about it?
Many times.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I have too.
I mean,
go ahead, Keith.
Well, I mean, it's just I've been doing this for a long time, so I've seen it back in the 90s when personal trainers and even athletic trainers were not even considered in the same, they couldn't even sit in the same room as PTs, and things have changed for the better now, but I've had PTs and doctors too prescribe things that were totally out of bounds and I knew would either be a waste of time or would just hurt the person. And you have to walk a delicate line because no matter what you say, no matter how good you think you are and how much experience you have, I mean, PTs still hold a very high standard, which they should. They go to a lot of schooling and they know their stuff. And I think the bad ones are just lazy. It's not like they're not taught. I mean, PT schools are good and most PTs that come out of them know their stuff very well. But, you have to be careful when you confront them. You have to do it in a way that doesn't seem like you're stepping on toes and that you want to work. But I've been hung up on. I've been called a retard. I've been called all kinds of things.
That's professional.
No, dude, that shit was hysterical.
Yeah, but I've had athletes come back to me and say, well, my physical therapist said you're retarded and that your assessment doesn't make any sense and that, why are you doing this and that kind of thing. So sometimes you have to swallow your pride and just shake it off. But at the end of the day, who got the person better? It was me. It wasn't PT. So I guess that's where your pride kind of, you pat yourself on the back instead of getting into it. So you really have to be careful. And you also have to be careful if you are a personal trainer out there that's dealing with injuries. And you're calling it corrective exercise because you can't call it anything else, you still have to be very careful what you do because you can cross a very fine line there and get yourself into big trouble. And, if you're doing something that could be considered rehab, which a lot of us do, or you could be doing something that's considered making a diagnosis or things that you're legally not allowed to do, you're dead. So you have to have good relationships with the people you work with. And a lot of those PTs, no matter how egotistical they are, and there's about orthopedic surgeons that have driven me nuts, but anybody you work out there with that's has a higher, I don't want to say knows more than you, but definitely in society would be kind of ahead of you. You have to be careful how you deal with them.
Tony, did you want to jump in there? It sounded like you had something to add.
I totally forgot my train of thought.
Okay.
Sorry.
Actually, you know what? I think we should probably ask Jimmy, too, before we move on to the next question.
Basically, more or less, real quick, I agree with Tony and Keith wholeheartedly. There's a physical therapist, a chef physical therapist by the name of Carl Lewitt, who had a quote that said, "He who treats the sight of pain is lost." And that's really what this applies to here. Is like a lot of people would probably be surprised to find out that the majority of my day is spent evaluating people, looking at how people walk, looking at how people move. And the issues you see on people are never directed to the area of pain. I mean, you know, I had a figure skater, 13 years old, who partially tore her MCL during a dismount. And, you know, she came in and, you know, I worked her glute med and I worked around her hips. And the whole point is she wanted to come in to try to – her mother wanted her to see if she can get her legs straight because that's something their orthopedist was knocked up on. You know, and just treating what was going on with her hip got her legs straight that day, a couple of days after the injury happened. You know, so I just think when you address issues like that, like he said, people are going to look at you weird. If someone has knee injury and you're telling them what's messed up with their hip, you really have to be good at explaining to people what you're looking for, because parents will want to hear like, oh, well, the problem's in the knee. And the whole point is you have to have confidence in yourself. And that goes back to a point Tony said. I was at a seminar. I think it was Ryan Lee's boot camp last September, and I was talking to a trainer there, and he was telling me that he just picked up Shirley Sarman's textbook, which is kind of like the gold standard in the industry, the most popular book that deals with, you know, pain symptoms. And he was like, man, that's really hard. He's reading the book, he's finding the book hard, but at the same time, he's still practicing that stuff. I don't want to say practicing, but he's still using those methods. Now, if you're thinking that material is hard, you shouldn't really be using that. You should go out and find a trainer who's a little more versed in it, or find a physical therapist, or find another professional in the health, fitness, and wellness field that you can refer out to. And that's the biggest thing, is the corrective exercise phase is not to make trainers the physical therapists. It's to make people better overall at what they do and let them realize their limitations. Yeah, sure, if a client has rotator cuff issues and you see their scapula's hiked, you can correct that. You know, you don't necessarily have to throw in the PT. But look, I mean, I'm probably, you know, I'm extremely confident in my skills as a trainer, therapist, whatever you want to call me. But if there's something I can't deal with, I'll be the first one to send them out to somebody else. Because I know that there's issues at play. Like with that figure skater, for example, I knew where I got her to. Her popliteus, a muscle in the back of the knee, has controlled the knee extension. It basically unlocks knee extension. I knew that was bound up. And I knew no type of foam rolling, no type of stretching, passive stretching, active stretching, nothing was going to do it. I referred out to an ART practitioner who got that straight in one treatment. That's nothing off my back. That just helps me in the long run. So I agree with everything everybody said.
So do you guys tend to have a go-to guy or a go-to lady for a PT that you will send someone out to? Have you all established someone that you tend to send your clients to?
Absolutely. I think you need to build a network of people that you trust and respect. Even just a really quick example, my girlfriend's mom, I was talking the other day about her lower back pain. She had a pretty serious surgery back about 3 years ago. But I'm going to get her in to see John Paloff in Worcester next week. I made sure I contact him, and because I know she'll be in good hands. So I think as a personal trainer and strength coach, networks, the more people in your network, the better off you're going to be. And I think it's crucially important to build that network and be successful.
Is that the same for you, Keith?
Yeah, I mean, I always have, no matter where I live. When I moved to Tucson, it's the first thing I did is I look for a good orthopedic doctor, I look for a good PT, and make my connections. It's easy for me now because I work in a center that has physical therapy tied to it, and we have excellent physical therapists. We have four people back there that are top of the line. So, you know, I can walk back there anytime I want, and you know, and I have some good doctors in the area too that I consult with. So that's always the very first thing I do, no matter where I lived, is I get in touch, I find a good ortho, and I find a good PT, and make connections with them.
Very good. Well, I think we stay on this topic a good amount of time. And this one last question I have for you guys. Are you guys still seeing like a good increase in the amount of ACL injuries in women? Because I swear that half of the females in my major have had ACL surgeries.
Yep.
Is this still what, like, has...
We always will, though. I mean,
you always will.
Always gonna. I mean, you just look at, you know, biomechanical difference,
yeah,
right, with, and the fact that women will complain about tight hamstrings. You know, get the bonehead trainer that will physically stretch their hamstring,
yeah, yeah,
instead of getting their glute to fire, and it just doesn't make sense. Especially like the figure skater I was dealing with, she was MCL and she had some ACL damage, and she's worried about her flexibility. She can get her ankle over her head, and that's all great, and you need it for that sport. But flexibility is too dangerous at times.
All right, that's a great point. All right, we'll keep moving on. Oh, Keith, do you have something you want to add to that before
we... No, I was just going to say it's going to happen. It's probably going to happen forever. I mean, you know, understanding what Jimmy said about flexibility is one part of it. But, I mean, I've worked with girls that have had, you know, we did everything right, and they still blew their ACLs. I mean, it's just the nature of the beast, and there's a lot of research going on out there right now about why is it happening, and it'll continue to go on. But it's definitely something that... that's going to continue, and I hate to say it, not to say that prevention doesn't work, but it's certainly, you know, I've been doing this since the early 90s, and I've seen the same amount of, you know, every time you turn around, the college soccer girls and volleyball are blowing their knees, and it's just the way it is right now.
You spent a lot of time around the college soccer girls, huh, there, Keith?
I tried my best.
Awesome.
All right. Well, I think we should keep going. Next question comes from Nikki. And hello, Nikki. This is a shout-out to New Zealand, as you requested. We actually have, like, a good handful of listeners in New Zealand. It's kind of nuts. Too bad everything costs a lot there. The question is, I'm following the Body for Life program with a little less carbs and a little more protein than the program states. I do supplement with protein bars, but not protein shakes, as they're mega expensive over here, see, like I was mentioning before. Anyway, I do the weight program, and I'm really noticing a difference in my body thanks to the weight training. My goal is to lose weight and, I hate this word, but tone up. Do I need to be taking creatine? If so, how much, and should I load on it? Or should I just take it gradually? Is it better to take it in a capsule or powder form? Look forward to your reply. Maybe you can give New Zealand a shout-out in your next podcast. I already said that, so I shouldn't mention that again. So guys, we have Nikki in New Zealand, and I think the main question to really hit on is creatine for fat loss, is a good thing or bad thing? I think we've covered it in the past, and I think we've all agreed that it's a good thing. I mean, you're going to...
Good thing. Yes, it is.
I mean, you might just retain a little bit water, and you might look... I mean, you won't even look more, like, puffy than you would if you weren't taking creatine. But, I mean, you might notice it if you take creatine for a couple months and stop taking it, and you stop holding on to all that water.
Well,
but
I don't know how much it really matters, though, Kevin. I mean,
exactly.
You know, that's, like, we're not... We're not. If you're not competing on stage, you shouldn't really give a damn about, you know, fluid dynamics. And again, creatine, you're not going to hold that much water. You're not going to be bloated, like, unless you're taking
these
advanced things. Yeah, exactly. It's going to go away. You're going to get used to it over time. And a lot of people's diets are extremely variable. So, you know, your sodium and potassium intake is going to be different every day, and that's going to have more of an effect on fluid dynamics than anything.
Yeah, and I mean, just talking about either capsule or powder form, I mean, go with powder. It's cheaper, and there's really no benefits to taking it in a capsule or powder form. It's the powder in a capsule. That's
yeah. Don't buy any of this crazy delivery stuff. Still buy creatine monohydrate. Like, I know there's 1,000 creatines out there. Like, I'm even seeing branched chain amino acids now that promise like BCAA ethyl ester because it's delivered better. What? Like, BCAAs enter the muscle cell fine, dude. Like stay with the regular creatine.
Yeah,
and I would add that a really good resource for any female listeners would be an article that Cassandra Forsyth in general a while ago for Muscle Latitude, basically just laying a smack down saying, hey ladies, you need to be taking creatine. It's the most researched supplement in history. It's safe. It's effective. There's really no reason why. If you're in the weight room on a consistent basis, there's no reason why you shouldn't be taking it.
And
If you want to get some cast on anything nutritionally, so I say yes, read that article.
Yeah, one question I have to Nikki is I don't know if he can import any protein from overseas, but I'm guessing that might make it too expensive as well. It just doesn't make sense why they have protein bars. And like, check those protein bars. Make sure soy protein isn't the number one protein in those bars, because that seems to generally be the case. And also, Keith, I wanted to ask you, I mean, just to get on you, just get you in on the conversation, what's your...
Okay.
Well,
yeah, all right.
What's awesome. Your take on loading? Are you going to... Okay, we have a joke going around through our texting, but... I just... Okay, no on creatine loading, just take it 5-10 grams a day.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay. All right, before we jump into... we do have a short roundtable today that we're going to quickly touch on with...
The roundtable?
Yeah, well, yes. Well, we have a quick one because we had... I'll mention it when we jump into the roundtable. But before we move on, quickly, just got to mention our sponsors. First off, TurbulenceTraining.com. Boost muscle growth and blowtorch body fat at TurbulenceTraining.com. Don't forget to check out TTMembers.com. Sign up for a subscription there. You get a new workout every single month. Also, this is like our seventh month with BlackStarLabs.com. They've been sticking with us, and I'm really glad that the listeners out there have been loving the products. It really seems that you guys have been jumping on with their ice, and also I posted about they have new labels for casein pro, which is kind of cool. But go check out blackstarlabs.com. You can save 10% with the code FIT10. That's FIT10. Throw that in the comments section at checkout. That discount will be applied when your order goes through, so you won't see it right away. And I should really close our text messaging we have going on so I can read these sponsors. And again, you can get anything from ICE there. They have Cytofuse that Carl Valley in the past has talked about, and it's the award-winning post-supplement drink of the Anaheim Mighty Ducks. Are they still called the Mighty Ducks? I think so.
Yeah. Big shout-out to Sean, who's there. Tony, how do you pronounce his last name? Sean. Sean, the strength coach of the Mighty Ducks.
Oh, I met him. I forgot his last name.
Yeah, he's a really cool guy. I forgot how to pronounce his last name.
Yeah, he's
sorry,
a really cool guy.
Yeah.
All right. Anyways, you can check that out. And they also have cheap beta alanine. They have it all there. I don't have to. You guys have been to Blackstar Labs. You know what they got. Also, RobertsonTrainingSystems.com. High octane corrective exercise and performance enhancement at RobertsonTrainingSystems.com. That's where you can pick up such great products as Bulletproof Knees. You can check out Inside Out. Fantastic manual. We actually, I've been using that in part with some of my with my practicum here at school, because everyone's starting to get into the foam rolling. Like they're starting to kind of teach the students in my major about foam rolling, which is good. And using that as a nice tool. And also, you can get Building the Efficient Athlete. So many great products there. And don't forget to check out Mike's free newsletter that he has come out, I think, about every week now or every other week. So check that all out at RobertsonTrainingSystems.com. And I think we'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back with a roundtable. Welcome to our roundtable. We did have a roundtable a couple weeks ago with Jimmy and I, where we started talking about getting into the fitness industry. We talked a little bit about Jimmy's kind of historic tale of how he got into the fitness industry. And I thought it'd be great to also ask Tony and Keith just a little bit about what steps they took to get into the fitness world, into being a personal trainer.
Kev, yeah. Can I jump in real quick before they get in on that? I just wanted to add one more thing to that. Don't believe, just because someone has their name like in lights more or less, or is in like a lot of magazines, don't necessarily buy a lot of it. We see there's a lot of guru worship in the industry. If you're a trainer, if you want to make your name for yourself in the industry, you know, just get after it. You know, don't worry about who's writing what. So go ahead, guys.
All right. We'll just jump to you, Keith. I mean, Keith, how did you first, when you were in college, how did you decide that this is something you wanted to do? Or was it even before college? Or maybe we'll ask Tony because we can't hear Keith.
I got into it because chicks love personal trainers.
Yes, they do.
Oh, dude.
So as far as back as I can remember, I've always been, I, as far as back as I can remember, I've always been interested in fitness. I mean, I started lifting weights, shoot, when I was back in 7th or 8th grade. I was actually a health education major, so, you know, I got certified to teach health for kindergarten through 12th grade in New York State, but I also had an internship that summer at a corporate gym. And it was basically from there that, you know, I really started to read and just get more into it. And, you know, I just have a passion for helping people reach their goals and make them stronger. So, you know, I took it upon myself to, as Jimmy said, get at it. And, you know, now I'm, you know, pretty happy here in Boston. So there's really not, like, a glamorous story I can say other than the fact that it's fun for me. I'd rather have a fun job than a job that, like, pays me, you know, thousands of dollars and I'm unhappy. So I can definitely say I go to work every day, I have fun, I have a blast, I learn a lot. And, you know, for any other trainers out there, I would hope that would be their same goal. And just, as Jimmy said, get at it.
Well, Tony, don't stop with your dreams there. I mean, there's still a chance of training Jennifer Gardner, right? I mean,
That's
I'm sure
true.
She pays
yeah.
pretty well.
I'm not, like, I mean, absolutely. I would love to get to the point where I'm training higher-end clients down the road. You know, that's definitely a goal of mine. And if or when I do train Jennifer Gardner, actually, speaking of which, did you see that Mike Boyle reference on the David Letterman show from her?
Yeah, I saw it in his, cool. I saw it in his newsletter, yeah.
No, I didn't see it.
I emailed him, and he's like, yeah, you know, we kind of joked back and forth on that, but... you know, I want Kate Beckinsale saying my name on the David Letterman show or something like that. You know, that's my goal.
Yeah.
I think it's important to have as a personal trainer, you know, I do have goals of what I want to do, and you know, the fact that I'm writing for more sites and whatnot has been great exposure. The FitCast has been great exposure, and you know, it's only been within the past 2 years that all this has happened, so. You know, I was training for 3 years prior to that, and which I know in the grand scheme of things isn't a lot of time. I mean, I haven't been training people for 20 years, but, you know, I have put my time in. I put my hard work in. I'd like to think I've done it the right way, and, you know, I'm hoping the future holds many more things to come. Good thing, so.
Well, Tony, just visualize it. And I mean, I know you go to bed every night just dreaming of Jennifer Gardner deadlifting and you watching her form. Just keep
oh,
it.
Man.
Just keep
it's
it.
It's funny because I'll get random emails from people like telling me pictures of Jennifer Gardner training. And, I mean, I've met her trainer, and Valerie Waters. So, you know, I don't want Valerie to get mad at me or that I'm trying to steal her client or anything. So.
All right, well... Keith, I mean, it's your time to shine. What's up, man?
All right, and make sure you can hear me here. But,
I can hear you perfectly.
Okay. Mine was a little bit different. I started probably in high school. I knew I wanted to do something in the field. I started training in my basement when I was 5. I would put the Rocky tunes on and do all that stuff. And and I was always lifting weights and those things all the way through. But I guess when I got into college, I got into sports medicine long, long time ago. I'm the old guy here, so... I have to date myself, but it was back in probably 1990 was the first time I trained my first athlete, and I knew right then that I definitely loved doing it, and that was the side of the training I liked the most, was making people not only get better but become better. So I started training athletes in 90, and I got my first real client, and when I say real client, like a college athlete type client in 92. And from there, I kind of did both sides of it. I did the rehab and the preventative side. And I also, you know, what was cool about my job is I had access to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of athletes every year for free. And, you know, because I worked in high schools and colleges and those type of settings. So I always had people around, and I always would get the weight room gig as well as the training room gig, meaning I would get the rehab and I also get the strength coach gig as well, because I usually you know, presented myself to the athletes that I knew what I was doing, so they would come to me for advice. And so I got to train thousands of athletes through the years, you know, basically for free. Now, that's good and bad. For free means for free both ways. Meaning I didn't have to go out and get them, but they also weren't paying. So I did a lot of groundwork for free in the 90s before it was, you know, it was a big deal. But I and then as the years went on, I just started, you know, it was before the internet. Again, I'm dating myself, so there wasn't a lot of access to information out there. So I remember sitting in the library and getting the strength and conditioning magazines and journals, and I would copy as many of those things as I could. And, you know, I still have those notebooks from back in the day. Where I would take all the strength and conditioning articles that I could read, whatever I could get my hands on. So I kind of come from a different background, the therapy side on one hand and the conditioning side on the other hand. My rise in the industry, I guess, was just was more on the athletic side. I didn't deal with many regular old people there until, you know, probably in the late 90s, and beyond. I was mostly all athletes, and I was training. I did a little stint in the NFL. I did a little stint in college and a lot of high school kids. So I got to see the athletes on all different levels. And, you know, I've always maintained, if you can train an athlete, you can train anyone. And not to put people that haven't trained athletes down, because that's not what I'm saying, but if you can train an athlete, because they're going to present to you every problem in the world that you're ever going to see. And if you can train an athlete, it's really, you can train anyone. So my transition to fat loss and my transition to dealing with some different special populations was very easy after I went from the athletic side of things.
Well, yeah, it sounds like, you guys have all had different paths. And, I mean, right now I'm struggling between jumping right into personal training or going into, for some reason I have kind of the teaching itch right now. To maybe go back and teach some a little bit.
Well, Kevin, real quick. I mean, just that you can do both. I taught as well, and when I was in the high school, just to supplement income, I got my teaching degree, and I taught classes that were related to the field. I mean, I taught sports medicine in college. I taught sports medicine in high school. I taught conditioning classes, nutrition classes. So those all helped my education, but they also, you know, were fun to do. And so you can do both if you do it in the right way. Even if you get a physical education degree, you can always take that and be a weight room coach in certain places and things like that. So, like I said, if you get in a public education, either college or high school, you have access to more clients than you'll ever get anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And you're never going to replace experience like that, ever. And that's the one thing that I really am thankful for in all the years that I had all those athletes at my disposal at any given time. And it really helped me become a much better trainer and a much better therapist, or whatever you want to call me, through the years, because I just had so many different experiences. So, you know, you can do both. Just make sure that you understand that. And it might actually open up some more doors for you.
Yeah, it's it's getting to crunch time, like I talked about a couple of weeks ago, where I have to figure out what the hell I'm going to do in the next 6 months, and hopefully put something together to the point where I know what I'm going to do. So maybe we'll have a poll and people out there can decide what I'll do.
You'll fall into things. That's the main takeaway that everybody should get out of, as well as young trainers out there or people that want to get into the field. You'll fall into what you're supposed to do. I mean, you know, just have a focus on where you want to go, and, you know, teaching maybe something you didn't think of, you know, a month ago, Kev. So it's like, you'll get where you got to go. It's basically what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, we'll see, and I'm sure everyone out there will know what's going on in the next couple months. I will continue to do the FitCast, though. I'll make sure it's something where, I mean, this is too much fun to do. So I think that will wrap it up for us this week. Is there anything you guys want to hit on before we head out?
I'm going to be in the Boston Herald.
What's that, Tony?
I'm going to be in the Boston Herald as a jogger.
What day is that going to be out?
I have no idea. They contacted me because someone was running a story on high-tech running devices, and they needed someone to pose for a picture. So I drove into the city. They took my picture. It was funny because I walk into the Boston Herald, and I'm like, oh, you the jogger? And it's funny because I haven't gone jogging in probably 3 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're starting to promote,
and my clients
like
are getting a riot out of this, because I'm always telling them that jogging, for the most part, sucks. No offense. Yes, there's some health benefits, but, you know, you guys know where I'm getting at.
Mm-hmm.
And so they find it absolutely hilarious that I'm going to be in the Boston Herald as a jogger.
Hypocrite.
Yeah,
going for the
seriously.
Money.
So, I think that issue is supposed to come out sometime next week. And so that'll be kind of funny. So,
well, keep us posted, and we'll throw it up on the site too.
Tony, you know, you say one thing and then you post your jogging pictures. You're such a part of the inner circle. It's not even funny.
Oh, yeah, you know.
And pulling out the, I hope you're not pulling out the running shorts either, because that.
I believe I was in wind pants and a t-shirt, so I'm safe.
Okay, very good. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for us here on this edition of the FitCast. So, again, don't forget to check out thefitcast.com for direct downloads. Check out our Facebook group. Just search for the FitCast in Facebook. I know that could, we have like 400 people on there now, so keep joining, keep adding your friends, even if they're not into fitness, just to make it look like we're more popular than we are. And Jimmy and Tony are on that too, so if you want to, I am?
Facebook?
I'm so lost on that site. I just made my profile the other day, and it's just like overwhelming.
Yeah, hit me up on Facebook, people.
Yeah, I know Jimmy wants some friends, so.
I have more friends than you do, pal, okay?
I don't think so.
On Facebook, I so do. If you don't count like the people you have from the FitCast Club, if you go head-to-head with my friends.
Oh, yeah. God.
Oh, God. Yeah, we should. I agree with Keith. We should just get the hell out of here. So, again, check those sites out. Don't forget to check out KeithScottTraining.com, JimmySmithTraining.com, and also Keith has a blog at KeithScott. Or it's Kate. Keith, what's your blog?
It's on the website.
Keith's
you'll find
blog
it.
Is so okay. hard to yeah, find. Just, like, I haven't gone to it in 2 months because I don't know the damn address.
Well, put it on a feed.
Yeah, bookmark it, man.
I don't have it on a feed, right?
Put it on a feed so every time somebody comes up with a new blog, it pops up. You don't have to do anything.
Yeah, Google feeds. All right. And also, check out GentleCoreTraining.com and some crazy link for his blog, too. And we're getting out of here. So, for episode number 68, I'm Kevin Larrabee.
I'm Tony Genelcore.
I'm Keith Scott.
I'm Jimmy Smith.
And we're glad to be back. And I hope you join us next week on another edition of the FitCast. Take care, everyone, and have a good one.